there's just no way around it. If you're not utilizing AI in some way, like, you're behind as a company. It just is going to make things 10 times more competitive from, like, a founder standpoint, from a product standpoint. Like, you're going to see a ton of startups pop up because they're doing all this research, all this stuff way quicker. It used to take months to put together, like, a good business case, and now you can, like, get it done within a week.
Welcome to Platform Builders, the podcast for leaders in software development to talk about the future of SaaS. I'm your host, Christine Spang, CEO of Nihilus, and I'm here with my co-host, Isaac Nassimi, our head of product. Each week, we'll be interviewing different builders to discuss the magic of software development. Platform Builders is brought to you by Heavybit, the leading investor in developer-first startups. For more information, visit heavybit.com. If you're interested in being a guest on this show, or if you would like to suggest a topic, send us a DM on LinkedIn.
Welcome to Platform Builders. My name is Isaac, and I'm here with my co-host, Spang. And today we have on the show, Brad Rigby. Brad Rigby is the Director of Product Management over at Canopy, the number one accounting practice management software on the market. Hey, Brad. Good to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, Brad. Good to see you.
Yeah, good to see you as well. Excited to be here.
To kick things off, I would love to know, Brad, what your favorite fun fact is. I know you're an aficionado of fun facts.
I'd like to think I am. All right, fun fact for me today. Ketchup used to be medicine. When it was first introduced, it was actually medicine. And so they had medicinal ketchup or tomato pills, and it was used to help cure indigestion.
Was this before the word ketchup was created and it was catsup at that time?
Yeah. Tomato pills is what they referred to them as.
I would guess that the sup would be short for supplement then in catsup.
Yeah, I think so. I haven't looked deep into it to know like where the naming came from, but I thought it was interesting that it was first medicine before it became a condiment, which is weird to think about.
That's awesome. That's going into one of the fun facts. It kind of reminds me that like Listerine used to be a floor cleaner, all those kinds of things.
Yeah.
So Brad, tell us a little bit about Canopy, what Canopy does, and you know, kind of your story of how you came to be at Canopy and maybe some of the founding story of Canopy if you were involved in any of that.
Yeah. So I actually joined Canopy about 5 years ago. So Canopy before then was really hot in the tax world. So essentially think about like tax resolution. So like if you're getting audited or something weird like that, we had a lot of tax resolution products and we were also building out tax preparation at the time. So, you know, it's tax season right now. Someone would be using Canopy for it. We pivoted actually right when I joined. And so now we are practice management, like what you mentioned before. So the easy way to talk about this is practice management really is just a CRM for accountants. It's like, this is my system of record. This is where I go to access all the things to help manage my clients as an accounting firm. And so that has been the kind of we pivoted to that vision right when I joined, and we've been doing it ever since. So we've expanded our product offering outside of just tax res. So we do a lot of things that, you know, in non-vertical SaaS, like you think is just like normal, but accounting is a very specific vertical that have very specific ideations around how they do things. So we have things, what we call like document management. So very similar to like a DocuSign. You can upload, sign documents, stuff like that. We have a task workflow area that we use. And then we do a time, billing, and payment suite. And so all the kind of the nitty-gritty details of like an accounting firm's bills. So accountants are running their own business. They still have to do their own accounting, if you will. And so we've expanded to different portions of that. And now we're trying to kind of call ourselves like a firm-wide operating system. Like this is like where you go for all the things you need to go. So that's my story and how I've been. But Canopy's been around for 10 years, and those 5 years prior, they were focused way more on tax. We actually, our name was Canopy Tax. Forever ago, we've kind of rebranded that just to be Canopy now, because we're trying to be more agnostic to tax and just be general accounting software.
I think that's really interesting. And you see a lot of startups pivot their focus entirely. I mean, I know Nihilist did, right? When Speng founded Nihilist, it was an email client initially. And, you know, we ended up going much lower level. I wasn't here at the time yet. We ended up going much lower level and really serving the APIs, you know, that help drive kind of the engine behind the email client. But I feel like it's rare to do that 5 years into a company, especially if you have, you know, some sort of traction and whatnot. So you were there when that change happened?
Yeah.
What was that like? What was kind of the rationale there? What was the internal vibe amongst the other employees? How was that?
Yeah, so kind of what happened, we were churning like crazy. And so that industry that we were in, the tax resolution industry, not a bad industry, but they skip around from software. So we weren't having people stuck in the software as much as we wanted to. So that's what we pivoted to be practice management, because we wanted it to be a sticky software. We didn't want it to be a transactional software that you could just go somewhere else to do. And so we switched that around, changed our entire vision, changed our strategy. You know, our board obviously was like a little confused by it, and we had a change in leadership at the time. So it was a massive change. It wasn't by any means small, but it was necessary. And so the biggest reason is just because we wanted to be more sticky, be more system of record, be really truly ingrained into an accounting's workflow and daily life, rather than just a seasonal offering that they just used once or twice a year around and after tax season. So that was a huge change for us. As far as like the people go, like, yeah, everyone was stressed about it. Everyone was, you know, we were going this way, now we're going this way. Like, why? And so us as a product team really had to like paint our vision and lay our stakes in the ground. Like, no, this is what we really want to do and what we should be doing. And so I'd like to say it's gone well. Like, obviously we're not there yet, but we've really turned the ship around and are a much better trajectory.
So your product team was the primary driver behind that change?
Yeah. So there were actually two or three product managers that came from the accounting space. And so they were very principal in that. And so I had come in like right as this was all happening. And so it was very interesting for me to watch as a product manager at the time. And so, yeah, it was very much the product team along with one of our GTM leaders that were trying to paint this vision and turn the company around.
I understand that, you know, product drives the roadmap, all that kind of stuff. But at the same time, when you've got something so ingrained into the DNA of a company and what that company does, it's really hard to get internal buy-in, internal alignment. How'd you guys get that snowball rolling or that boulder rolling down the hill for yourselves?
We were smaller at the time, so you didn't have to get everyone bought in as much. We had like maybe 70 people. And so when we talked about it, it was like, hey, like we're not turning away from our current strategy fully. We are just pivoting so that like we can support this area of our app, which everyone like understood, while also going after this other portion of the market we're missing. It actually wasn't that hard to do because almost everyone, whether you are sales, support, CS, marketing, had been already hearing this from our customers.
Yeah.
Like, when are you guys gonna do this? When are you gonna do this? From a product standpoint, the validation was like very easy to show because we already had people asking for us to do all these number of things that we weren't doing at the time because we were focused on tax. And so, like, yeah, we came up with the strategy, but it was also very validated by a bunch of our users and prospects and industry influencers. And so when we started to paint that picture to everyone of like, hey, if we start to expand, we start to go in these other realms, like our average deal size is going to go up. Our LTV is going to go up because we're going to have more breadth and depth into the application. And so we're not just getting a tiny portion of the firm, because that's what would happen. So you have a firm of 10 people, you have one person who does tax res and maybe two or three that do tax prep. So we'd be getting three employees of the 10. And we weren't expanding at all. So it made a lot of sense to a lot of people to move this way, and very actually easy to get them on board just because they had already heard it themselves.
So it sounds like one of the drivers of, you know, this being a pivot that maybe pivot's not really the right word to describe it. It's more of like a reorientation in terms of how you position the software and kind of like what it takes care of for the buyer. It sounds like, you know, the people buying the software were part of the same businesses.
Often, yeah.
And that was something that maybe simplified the transition. But were there aspects of this transition other than sort of the feature set? Like, did you have to start talking to different people at the companies? How did you frame Canopy as sort of existing within the tech stack of the people who were using it?
Yeah, no, we had to reframe it that for sure. Because instead of just being like, hey, we're this specialized tool that does tax and tax prep and kind of is your CRM, we had to like reposition ourselves as like, no, we are your system of record. We are your CRM. Like, we want to store all of your information for everything that you need to do with your clients. And so instead of talking to like one or two people in the firm, like we started talking to partners and like operation managers, more operation-minded people to understand like, hey, what are the needs that you need on this side of the business? What are you lacking over here? The nice thing about, nice for us, in the tax and accounting and finance industry, most of our incumbents, most of our competitors at the time were incumbents who had desktop software. So they get an update a year from this company, if that. And everything's on the desktop. So nothing's like live or anything like that. Like, they have to have all this other stuff. So like, we'd really started to pivot ourselves as like, hey, no, we're cloud. We're the cloud, like purely cloud-based. Everything's very secure. Anyone can access it. And then this was at COVID, like right when COVID hit at the time too. So that's actually, we had made this pivot at the beginning of 2020, and then COVID hits. And because we made this pivot and started like saying, hey, we're cloud, we're your system of record, it resonated across the industry because everyone went remote. And now they're trying to figure out, okay, how do I get access to all of my employees who are now working at home when I only had access on site on the server? And so we had a lot of people coming to us because of that. So that framing around cloud and system of record online actually really propelled us even further into a world like we thought was going to take a little bit longer, but it actually ended up happening really fast. So I would say like those are probably the main aspects of how we rebranded, and we also actually did rebrand, like new logo. We dropped the tax off Canopy Tax, just call ourselves Canopy Inc. And so it was truly a full rebrand from all aspects of the business.
That's kind of wild for me to hear that even in 2020, the main competitors in this space were like desktop software. Like, yeah. At least, you know, you're in sort of, you know, Silicon Slopes area. It's pretty tech forward. Me and Isaac are in California and kind of embedded in Silicon Valley culture. And it's like, we just like don't think about the fact that there are like some industries that like, you know, are not early adopters of technology. And like for us, it's like the cloud, that's like crazy old news. We're like totally over the cloud. We're doing like, you know, AI agents now. Who cares about the cloud?
Yeah.
And yeah, there's like still these industries out there where, you know, moving to just like a cloud-based system that is made specifically for their business is truly game changing. And I think you guys are just like a really good example of this like broader trend in software really right now of, I think people are calling it vertical SaaS, where, you know, at first the SaaS platforms that came out were the big behemoths that were horizontally made to support everything, you know, things like Salesforce and kind of other players that are kind of in that realm of, you know, they're not really specifically designed for any one business. And then the tools have gotten like way better. People can use APIs in order to really develop things faster. And the net result is that now people are building hyper-specialized SaaS applications for like every business under the sun. Like you can buy SaaS software to launch like a brick and mortar pizza shop. And those people actually need software and get a lot of benefits out of SaaS too. And they have specific workflows like you were talking about around Canopy and kind of, you know, the way that they structure their businesses, the things that are really important, like what do these people like think about and need to do day to day. And I think it's just like a really cool example of how vertical SaaS has like come and addressed a need that was really always there. And these people just like didn't really have good modern tools that they could use to really make their lives much easier day to day.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree, because you bring up Salesforce, right? If you were to go to an accounting firm and say, hey, like this is all we have, and Salesforce is not cheap at all. So they're like, cool, I'm going to sign 10 users up and pay $20,000 a month. Like, it's not going to happen for this industry, or like smaller companies, or, you know, like a tire shop or something like that. It's just not like, doesn't make sense for them economically. And so you come in with this more vertical view that's like literally built for them, just for them, and is priced accordingly as well, to a degree. You know, like we're not trying to like be cheap or whatever, but it's still cheaper than Salesforce. So yeah, it's a very interesting, I like verticals personally, because you can really just dig in so deep and understand them. Whereas like being in general SaaS and horizontal SaaS, like I feel like prioritization from a product standpoint would be really hard, because you're like, okay, we'll just build this and hopefully all the industries will be cool with it. Whereas like for me, it's like, rather than trying to decide which industry to go to, I know the industry, it's really focused on which features I prioritize rather than where I'm trying to attack industry-wise.
Yeah. Did you know the tax vertical or the accounting vertical before you joined Canopy? Or is it something that, you know, you got to know the users?
So my sister lived in the Bay Area, and she worked for a tax firm. And I worked as an accounting clerk in college, but that was like my only two connections to like the tax and accounting industry. So I had zero knowledge. Before I came to Canopy, I was very much in like the CRM world of like building just a CRM at the time for salespeople. So I actually came in to Canopy to work on their CRM specifically. And yeah, but I had zero tax and accounting experience really, because like job in college, like, I don't know. You don't know anything in college.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think one of the superpowers of just like a good product person is you just develop this generalized skill set of how to ask questions and how to like go and like talk to the actual people and figure out like what are their pain points. And that's something that's generalizable, you know, no matter what domain you're working with. Like, you don't have to be an expert in whatever in order to build software for these people. You just have to like show up with a learning mindset and know how to go and talk to people and learn about what can make their lives easier. I'd love to go back for a second to like this comment you made about how Canopy is kind of like becoming the system of record for these accounting firms. Was there something else that they were using before? Like, are you displacing another solution and consolidating it? Or was it like notepads and like pens and paper or something?
Yes to both. Like, it's funny because the amount of times I get on a call, still to this day, they pass manila folders around still. Like, it's kind of funny. But yeah, no, there's a ton of like point solutions. We call them point solutions in the industry. So if they weren't on like one of the larger incumbents, the desktop software that do have like a full suite of products, they were either on like a portion of that incumbent tool and using like three or four other point solutions. So we call ourselves the all-in-one, like we consolidate a lot of that. So sometimes these people would be moving from four or five softwares to one, and maybe like another specialized tool that they just don't want to give up, which we get. So we consolidate quite a bit for these firms, which they're a fan of. They don't want to be jumping into multiple places at the same time. So that's really resonated in our industry as well is, yeah, no, I don't want to be in five or six different solutions. Like, no, like I don't want to train my team on that. I don't want to have that, like have to like aggregate data from everywhere and start analyzing in an Excel sheet. Like that's just going to cause more work, more time. And they're used to it, unfortunately. So like when they come to us and like a lot of the times they're like, wow, like I have saved hours of time not having to do all of this work just to do one job. So that's been what's really helped a ton. The other thing in the accounting industry, which I'll mention, is that there has actually been a huge decrease in new headcounts for accountants. Like people aren't going to an accounting as much as they used to because the lifestyle is harder. Like you think tax season, like these people are putting 80 to 120 hours a week in. It's not easy. And so like one of our like core also beliefs is like, how do we improve the lives of these people? How do we make the accounting industry like this? You'll laugh at this, but it said so much interesting. How do we make accounting sexy again? Like it was in the 70s and 80s, you know? And so like, that's like something we're like our core that we're trying to do. How can we help make this like a fun industry again and make people want to go into accounting and not dread it? So a lot of that goes on. And because we consolidate, we save time. And when we save time, people are happier.
What do you think the biggest things you're doing are to make accounting sexy again?
We're definitely not using like new age slang terms, just to be clear.
So no skibbity or anything like that?
No skibbity.
Okay.
No, we're not saying slay constantly. Like, no. But I mean, we are infusing AI heavily into our application. There's just no way around it today in 2025. Like if you're not utilizing AI in some way, like you're behind as a company, hands down. And so we are heavily investing in AI and trying to infuse like all of our tools with AI just to one, speed them up, two, make them smarter, and three, like help suggest how an accounting firm can run smoother themselves. So that is like probably the biggest thing that we're doing this year is heavily investing in that.
That's awesome. But you know, my question on that is, these AI-focused features look very different to everyone, right? You know, I've seen some pretty poor implementations or things that are like a little bit too forward-facing or things that are just so subtle that you could only even realize it's being done by AI if you really think about it and drill down into like, wait, how the heck are they doing this? What's the framework you use to approach this with? And also, how do you make sure to meet your audience and your users at their level of technical acumen? Because you know, I know anytime you're dealing in a space that's not, you know, extremely tech-philic, sometimes it's hard to get people to use new features.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think, you know, I introduced a generative, you know, in fact, somewhat using Nihilist to a degree, I introduced a generative AI feature to our tool 2 years ago. That was like the first thing that we pushed out. I don't think it had like amazing adoption because people were scared. Candidly, like, a lot of the feedback that I got during it was like, is this safe? Are you stealing my data? Is the AI stealing my data? So yeah, there's a lot of hesitation. I think that has changed quite a bit in the last 2 years. Like I think people are a lot more comfortable with AI, but going back to what you said, like, is there utility there? Is it just gimmicky? Do they know it's AI? So what we focus on first is, what's the job to be done? What's the pain point? What are we trying to solve here? And really look at it from that, like from the customer point of view. And then when we go to the table of like ideation, of like solutioning what to do after we put that together, that's where we start to think about like, does it actually make sense to use AI here or not? Like we want to think about AI first and any way we can use it because it just makes sense in some use cases, but oftentimes it doesn't as well. And so, like, we have a feature we just launched that is a newer AI feature for us. And you would never know that an AI is doing it too in the user experience unless we told you, which we do. And the reason we're doing that is because we have to get people comfortable with it first before we kind of change it to just be part of a regular experience. So we're calling it smart AI, like document automation is what we're calling it. So like it literally, that's how we have to do it in our industry. Because if we were just to launch a feature and not disclose that it was AI, people would, they'd hound us. Like, these are accountants. These are people who look line by line at numbers and debits and credits and everything. They do the same thing with software. They're worried about data. They're worried about security, all that kind of stuff. So we have to be very careful when we introduce an AI feature to them and make sure that we're kind of like just baby stepping them into the idea of it and then helping them understand. And then once we've gotten to that point, like with the email stuff, like we have other email tools on it and it's just not a big deal to them because they understand it. So now like we're introducing this AI tool that's within their documents. We're baby stepping them into it and then we'll go grandiose and kind of drop the whole like, this is Canopy AI. This is Canopy's document management solution.
Without getting like a too low level, I'm actually curious to hear about the feature. If it's something that, you know, people wouldn't guess would be AI driven unless you tell them, that's actually pretty interesting to me.
I mean, they might think it, but they're not, just because they're, so OCR is like what has been the document reader solution for ages, right? And that in and of itself is essentially machine learning to a degree, right? So that's all we're doing, but we're utilizing these AI companies to just categorize documents and then rename them for people, which people in our industry still get a stack of papers and they scan them and they go through every single one. They split out the document, they rename it, and then put it together as part of like their work papers. So what we're doing is exactly that. We're literally doing what they pay someone $20 an hour part-time for like tax season to do. We're scanning their document. We're telling them what's in the document. We're renaming it for them and helping them understand like what the makeup of all the documents are. So it's as if a person is doing the job for them. Half of our users think it's OCR, which like, sure, it is, but it's through AI because they're used to OCR. They're used to like that. They're used to like having human review it too. So it's a similar technology, but AI is like so much more accurate and so much faster than OCR technologies are. So that's why I'd say it's like might be able to tell, might not, unless we tell them. And we do tell them.
I think it's awesome because OCR, if I recall, predates computers, right? It's from like the 1920s originally, like for taking documents and turning them into like telegraph.
Yeah,
which is crazy to even think about. And, you know, we definitely got some big upgrades for that in the internet world and whatnot. But at the same time, you know, it's still just converting the document into, you know, text, or it has been. And this is just one of those things that like we've just gotten this huge unblocker and this huge burst of potential. And you don't see it implemented everywhere, right?
No.
The document understanding instead of document reading. Super cool to see that ball being pushed forward, especially in some place like accounting, where man, there's just so much manual stuff going on every day.
Yeah, it's funny because we look at, you know, other industries. For instance, the law industry, very similar as far as like jobs to be done. Like obviously they do things differently, but at the end of the day, they have clients. They gather documentation from these clients. They provide services for these clients. They do the job. They get paid. Heavy around documents, heavy around like the services and the accounting of that. The law industry, I would say, is probably like 5 to 10 years ahead of the accounting industry.
Wow.
So they actually have a bunch of solutions because we've looked at like diversifying and looking at, oh, maybe we should look at the law industry as well. But they have a bunch of tools in there. And so they actually introduced this AI documentation tool like 2 years ago, and it's killed it for them. There's a few companies here in Utah, and we've talked to them about it. Like, hey, how's your automation tool with AI? And they're like, it is the best thing we've done since we've started our company. And so we're like, okay, cool. Like, we're going to do it. So it's kind of interesting to see these industries tangent of us, but a little bit ahead of us, have so much success and need for it. And it's starting to take hold into our industry as well now.
Why do you think the law industry would be so far ahead technologically?
I don't know. Because, you know, depending on where they're at in law, like I think from like a, if you're like a business lawyer in business law, like it makes total sense. Like you're dealing with SaaS companies, like it's a no-brainer. Like, no, this SaaS company, they're not going to want to meet in person. They're not going to want to drop their documents off to you. And so I think probably the problem there, like on the document side, like they have, I think, just as much, if not more, documents they have to deal with on their end than we do. And so I think it just was ripe for change at the time. And I think on the accounting industry side, like they had tools. And so people were okay with the status quo for a little bit longer. But then you started getting, there's this trend in the accounting industry where they started hiring operational minded people that had zero accounting experience, just came in to like revamp the operations. And so you had these people starting to introduce technology more and more into these firms. And so I think it just kind of came to fruition after that, where I think the law industry just made sense just from like a who their clientele was. And so the recommendation, the pain points were more prevalent then, whereas on the accounting side, it wasn't.
I'm curious about this sort of like platformization thing. Like for Canopy, do you think that the things that are going to produce the most value and the most growth for Canopy is going to be going wider and sort of bringing in sort of more functionality into Canopy? Or is it more going deep, like adding more AI, making the stuff that you already have today more in depth and continuing to add depth to like the set of tools that you brought together already?
Yeah, we've had a lot of discussions about that. I think, you know, we've gotten to the point where, you know, we've gone wide for a while. We've gone really wide and taken on some projects that really expanded us into other places that we never thought that we would. We feel now comfortable for the next like year or two, just providing depth, truly because we need it. We're starting to also like really get into some bigger firms that are a lot more sophisticated and have different needs. And so trying to address those without like, we don't need to go build XYZ extra because it's like, no, we have our tools good enough, like, but we need like, you know, ABC for this feature now because it's necessary and they already have a tool that they're using that they would like to get rid of because it doesn't have the breadth that we have, but it's really good at this one thing. And so I think you get to a point in SaaS from a platform standpoint where it's like, it makes sense to kind of take pause on the platform play of like widening that and just go deeper for a few years. And it just makes things so much easier to bring people on because they're looking for one or two features. They're like, okay, cool. You have 90 features, but you don't have these three features in this one area. And they won't move to us if that's the case. And so that's what we're trying to do right now is go a lot deeper. And that's where we see AI really helping out is like, how can we make this tool ingrained into their life and not just something that's like, I'm going to use this every day, to like, no, I can't live without this tool. And so that's what we're trying to do right now.
You talked about before about how you guys can replace like five tools internally at a lot of firms and whatnot. And I've always found the challenge with that sort of approach because, you know, you're offering bundling, you're offering everything kind of in one place and this kind of integrated thing. And I think the CRM is in the future always going to be the hub, right, of where that happens. And I don't think Canopy is any exception there. But when you're trying to displace five tools at the same time, I think you run into this problem where you're providing a subset of all of these tools that you're replacing because those are very specialized singular tools. And so, yeah, maybe you have the 80-20 of the features, right? but you know, you don't have all of them. And I found what you run into is that each person you talk to has this different slice of the features that they need from those five tools that you're replacing that you're not quite hitting. Do you have any advice for anyone who's in a similar place and, you know, is dealing with that from a product perspective?
Yeah. And it's not an easy problem to solve, right? Because you want to please everyone. You have empathy for everyone as a product person. And so you have to pick your battles. My advice is dig in with customers as much as you can, prospects and current customers. Even though they may want something else, like they're actually probably looking for something else. Like they're probably actually meaning X when they're calling it Z. And so often you'll find that there's this idea that you keep hearing from sales. Like that's where we hear a lot of stuff, right? Of like, you guys have everything but this. That's where we hear it a lot. When you start to dig in, like I did this the other day, they were asking for a feature and I was like, yeah, cool. Like, so what does that feature actually mean to you? What is it doing for you? And so truly understanding like where the pain point is, what they're looking for can actually be much different than what it is on the surface. And so you start to do enough of that and talk to enough of people and you start to really understand like, okay, like this isn't just a one-off thing with this firm. Like for instance, like a firm I talked to the other day, they're like, oh, I need this export and I need it now. And I'm like, okay, why do you need the export? Well, I'm doing an in-depth analysis of our accounts receivable. I'm like, okay, cool. We actually have a tool for that in our reporting suite. And they're like, oh, well, I don't know how to do that. And I'm like, okay, cool. So this is not necessarily a feature issue. It's a training issue and or a perception issue. And so you'll find that these ideas tend to weed themselves out the more you talk to customers. I am like huge on being obsessed with talking to customers and prospects because they're actually going to end up pointing you in the right direction or weeding out the ideas that are distractions.
That's awesome advice.
I'd love to go back towards AI for a second. So obviously things are changing super fast. There's a lot of hype out there and everybody who's building applications is trying to figure out what are things that I can build that drive real value for my end users at the end of the day. What have you found is the sweet spot for where people can use the technology and the techniques that exist out there today and actually create end user value and experiences that is a huge upgrade over what they might have had before?
Yeah, I think that's the fun part now too, is that in our industry and probably everyone's industry is that you see a new startup pop up every single day that does that job or is doing a job that you thought of, you know, 5 years ago, but wasn't technologically possible or feasible at the time, right? And so that's actually something that's been fairly easy for us because we're a platform, right? So we are technically, we own the data. And at the end of the day, in my opinion, if you have the data, you're going to win out on every single one of these smaller AI startups because they don't have access to that level of data or that amount of data. And so when we're thinking about like ways to bring AI that really provide utility, it's all surrounding the customer's data and how we can manipulate that data or make it useful to them without ruining their workflow, right? Like something that we try to do is really layer it in so that it's just a casual experience, but casually suggesting, not like forcing them to do anything. One of the ideas that we've always had is just like, hey, how do we, and this is everyone right now, it's like, hey, how do we create an agent? How do we have an agent in the app that is doing all this work for them? Well, I go talk to like customers about that and they're like, no, I don't care about that. Like, here's what I want it to do and I want it to do it my way. And I'm like, okay, but then I'll talk to another customer and they're like, yeah, that'd be cool, but I want it to do this job and this job only. And so you have to have like a good level of like testing your proof of concepts. That's something that like we do a lot with AI. not necessarily we don't with other features, but I want to get it in someone's face. I don't want to be building a feature if they're not going to see it's useful. So like the document automation tool, when we first introduced it, it was essentially just a thing that classified documents. So it said, this is a W-2 from 2019 from the IRS or whatever, something like that. And then we would merge the documents. And so we got that in people's face. We started showing them that. And we told them it was built by AI. And they're like, yeah, that's really cool. Why doesn't it rename? Like, we don't really care about the classification as much. I want the document's name to change. I spend a lot of time doing that. And so I found that when you show proof of concepts, when you introduce users to your ideas before they're shipped, they actually are able to take it a step further for you and say, yeah, no, this is useful, but I want this as well. And then I'll buy it. So getting stuff in front of customers as often as possible, not only just talking, but getting it in their face is something that we've done a ton and found a lot of success in making like very, very heavily utilized AI tools.
Makes sense. What about on the, just like the tech management side, you know, you're trying to add more depth to Canopy. Like, are you adding engineers to the team or are you just like getting more done?
No. Yeah. I mean, so all of our engineers use, like we use AI to help, like they use it to help code. So that's actually sped things up quite a bit, but we're also going out and hiring a bunch of people too. So we've been fortunate enough to be able to do that right now. Because like we believe in that this can really change our market for the better. And so we're going to get some very talented people to help improve our AI or start testing new ideas so that we can get it to our customers and get it to their face and see if we've missed the mark or not.
That's awesome. Looks like we're just about out of time. And before we wrap, we always do a section we call picks of, you know, everybody sharing something. It can be a tool, it can be a piece of media, anything that you found interesting and are excited about right now. So, Brad, do you have a pick to share with our listeners?
Yeah, so I, as a product person, something that is like, and this is being introduced in many tools, unfortunately, but also fortunately, something that is very time consuming or used to be, and Isaac, you can confirm if I'm wrong on this, but putting together competitive analysis, like very in-depth analysis, takes a lot of time. And having like multiple slide decks to pull from. So something I'm like actually very, very excited about is all the deep research tools that are coming out in AI. Like taking 10 to 15 hours of work that used to be for me to like go look at all of our competitors, figure out what their suite of products are, and then like start putting them into like a good comparison matrix can be done in minutes now by an AI. And it's something that like I am like extremely excited about. So that's probably the thing I'm most excited about right now from like a software standpoint, just because it's going to save me a ton of time and allow me to focus on like what I want to focus on, which is talking to customers and, you know, really what the strategy is, and having that just at my fingertips is just, oh, it's going to be so exciting. From anyone who's in like a strategy or competitive analysis role, like you got to be using deep research tools every day.
I really agree. And I think that was one of those things that when I saw it coming out, I was like, hey, you know, I don't really need a big bucket of slop of stuff you found, where I can Google my own stuff. And as soon as I tried it, I was like, whoa, this is like 10 hours of work that just got done in the amount of time it took me to get up and make a cup of coffee. Totally has changed the way, I don't know. It's one of those things you keep realizing throughout your day. You're like, wait, I could actually use it for this also. It's fantastic.
Yeah. The thing is why I'm like, I say it's unfortunate too, is because it just is going to make things 10 times more competitive from like a founder standpoint, from a product standpoint. Like you're going to see a ton of startups pop up because they're doing all this research, all this stuff way quicker than it used to be. It used to take months to put together like a good business case. And now you can like relatively get it done within a week if you do it right. And that means including talking to people in the market, not just taking whatever's in ChatGPT and copying and pasting it. Like, you can't do that, just to be clear. You still need to like have some level of knowledge to make good prompts and to curate these responses.
I agree. I'm a little less doom and gloom about like the negativity of the Cambrian explosion of apps that will just keep happening with these things, because at the end of the day, if the bar is that low, then you'll see commoditization and the bar will become higher again. And then what people expect out of a business or an application in order to be successful will just become high again. And everyone wins. The consumer wins, and you know, the businesses that are nimble and scrappy and scramble well will win too.
Exactly.
Totally. Makes sense. Isaac, do you have a pick today?
I do. It is a health tracking or nutrition tracking app called Alma Nutrition, A-L-M-A. And I'm someone who, I used MyFitnessPal for a long time to log all my food and calories like a true type A person. And they eventually added some very aggressive monetization to that product. I switched over to something called Lose It. And at the end of the day, these were all just kind of like tracking apps. And Alma is so cool because it's one of those like AI first kind of apps where you just press the microphone icon and you just rant to it about the meal you just had. And it could be from a restaurant or just a list of like ingredients that I pulled out of the fridge. And it does a damn good job of really giving you solid calorie counts and estimates. And that's somewhere where if you're like 10% off and you're overeating by, you know, 230 calories a day, that actually adds up to something very significant over a year or two of habituating that. And Alma really has figured out how to get it right with the AI first stuff. It's super cool. And I can speak to it like a human being.
I do really like how the latest round of AI tech has made voice interfaces actually good.
Yeah.
Like, these have existed forever, you know? And you're like, hey, Google, blah, 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 blah. And it was like, okay. But now we've gone from like, well, I could set a timer with my voice to I can actually do a bunch of stuff that's actually really useful in a lot broader ways.
That, like, I was literally talking about this the other day. I was looking for a new app because I was so sick of MyFitnessPal.
Yeah.
Like, their monetization strategy in the app was just, like, so distracting, so annoying. I feel like I'm, like, trying to download, like, a song from LimeWire without, you know, getting a virus on my computer. Like, clicking all the, like, pop-ups, like, get away. That's how I feel like with MyFitnessPal. So I'm definitely going to take your advice and try it out.
Yeah, and the one last thing I got to say from a product perspective that they do really well is they have a lot of functionality that, again, it's just all access through a microphone, and you can kind of feel that they have this like pipeline of like classifying what you're doing. Are you asking a question about food you ate earlier? Are you trying to delete something? Are you trying to add something? And then delving more off of that. And I think that's like a level up from what we've seen in the past few years of people just kind of like transparently proxying something to ChatGPT's API and then, you know, trying to do something. It's cool to see these pipelines in place. That is the future, I feel like, of this stuff.
Yeah.
Spang, what about you?
My pick for today is the Zusa Transit Pack. It's pretty small. It's like 20 liters. And the best thing about it is it has this like sleeve on the back that you can put it on your carry-on. You know, if you have like one of those roller boards. And then the best thing about it is that you can then walk through the airport with nothing on your back and you feel awesome. And you arrive, your business trip, you know, speaking at a conference, whatever, and you're like, oh, I don't feel like I've done any work at all. I used to be really masochistic and I would travel with everything in like a duffel bag that I just carried on my back. And switching to a roller suitcase and a little backpack that goes on top has just been life-changing for me.
Yeah, if you are making any backpack makers out there, if you don't have that strap that allows you to set it on top of your like roller bag, yeah, it's just, I'm out.
I used to have like a different travel-oriented backpack and it didn't have that. And now I will never go back.
Me neither. I don't have that company, but I have a similar one and it has the sleeve and it's made travel for business like way better.
I'll never buy another car that doesn't drive for me, and I'll never buy another travel backpack that doesn't go on top of my rollerboard.
Love it.
Cool. Well, that brings us to the end of our episode today. Thank you so much, Brad, for joining us and sharing so many great stories and insights from your time at Canopy. And great to see everybody until next time.
That's all we have time for today. If you're interested in being a guest on the show, or if you'd like to suggest a topic, send us a DM on LinkedIn. This show is brought to you by Heavybit, the leading investor in developer-first startups. To learn more about Heavybit, visit heavybit.com.